Testing. 1, 2, 3, 4. Testing. This is Magdalene Cassidy. We are about to take a tape from Jean Lawrence, Mrs. Sidney Lawrence, September the 28th, 1965. Present George Sturgis, Harry Hughes, and Magdalene Cassidy at the home of James Cassidy. Stop. Jim Cassidy, present, Mrs. Magdalene Cassidy, George Sturgis, Harry Hughes.
In Colmar, Alsace-Lorraine, in 1887, raised by French parents, very strict, and left. And when I was 32 years old, to come to America to visit her uncle. I liked it so well that I stayed. I opened myself a studio in Los Angeles, where I stayed for about a year, and had the luck to meet Sidney Lawrence through some mutual friends. Those friends invited me to come to the studio to Sidney, and as it happens, my studio was right next to his. But as I worked downtown in a small studio, I did never meet him. And the first thing when I met Sidney Lawrence between him and me was a bondage I can't explain. So we got as friends. I looked after Sidney. He was quite ill when he got there. He had a heart ailment and had to be very careful. So I looked after him and some friends, later on he went back to Alaska and they said, "See, Sidney, you look wonderful." So he told them that he met a French girl who makes good dinners and looks after him. And when he came back, later on, Mrs. Belle Simpson from the Nugget Shop said, "I got to go to Los Angeles and meet that girl he talked so much about it. I hope she's not one of those again who just goes and be nice for a while and takes everything away and runs." So when she came to Los Angeles, Sidney told me that Belle Simpson is coming if he can invite her for dinner. I said, "Sure, your friends are my friends." And when Belle Simpson came, she and I got friends right on the spot. And too, she came to me after dinner and said, "Jenny, why don't you meet and marry the man?" I said, "In my country, it's altogether different. The man asked the girl." So she said, "Would you marry him?" I said, "Sure enough, because I promised his doctor to look after him as long as he lives when he comes to California." Then she went to Sidney and said, "Sidney, do you know you're going to lose that girl?" He says, "How so?" He says, "An old fellow is after her. He wants to marry her. Why don't you marry her?" He said, "Oh, I haven't got the nerve." I say, "I can't ask her. She's so much younger. It would look like when I snatched the cradle." And he said, no, I says, "You marry?" "Oh," he says, "I don't want to lose Jenny." So she came to me, says, "Jenny, you really marry Sidney when he asks you?" I said, "Sure." I say, "I promised the doctor I never be but looking after him when he's here. And then when I marry him, I can come to Alaska with him." So back she went to Sidney, says, "It's all arranged, Sidney." And when she left to go back to Alaska, we went to the train with her. She kept saying goodbye, kissed Sidney goodbye, kissed me goodbye, and said, "Well, Sidney, I'm going to tell him that you will arrive with your young bride in May." And sweetie got all red and said, "Did you hear that, kid?" I said, "Yes, that's all right with me." And so away she went.
Well, you proposed, huh?
About 3 weeks later came a newspaper, and around the newspaper a red line, and sweetie, I didn't call him sweetie then, came and in and says, look, kid, look, read that, read that. I read it, and I said, yeah. He said, when is it going to happen? I said, on the 8th of May. I don't know how I choose the 8th of May, but the 8th of May, I said, and the 8th of May, we got married. And then we came to Juneau, and we traveled, and we came back from Juneau in different places, Ketchikan, Juneau and Petersburg, and until we got to Seward and then back to Anchorage. And so we made the trip, and winter we went back to California, and in spring we came back here. Then one day I said, sweetie, I like to paint Munmun Kinley too. He says, good kid, you walk for it, I hiked for it, and you can do your own studies because it's in you, and I don't ever want you to copy. So off we went that spring, and in Hollywood there was a young dancer at the studio next to ours, and he asked Sidney if he could come along as campman. He would like it as experience. So Sidney said, yeah, sure, Artie, you come along. So Art Cranky accompanied us up to Munmun Kinley, and it was a hike of 140 miles, starting in Talkeetna, crossing three rivers, and then we started. We had our wagon, we had the horses and mules, and the wagon was loaded so high, as high as a room. And then he said to me, says, Kit, we set you on top there. I said, uh-oh, not Jenny. I said, can I walk? And there was a fellow from Switzerland. And he says, I walk with her. So, okay, we started our hike. And it was a 24-mile hike. And we two went ahead and walked. And when Sydney and the wagon load and all came, we had already a big pot of spaghetti cooked for them. And Sidney said, Kit, how did you do it? I said, well, on those, how could I do it? And he said, I didn't think it's in you. I thought the women would we pick you up. So we went, and we picked up seven miners who went to their mines back. And they had a cabin, you know, and we all was in that. Only one cabin who was there. And we slept, I had the bunk next to Sidney. Suddenly Sidney poked me in the ribs. He says, Kit, get up, get up. I said, yeah, what is it? He said, you must cook dinner, must show him what a good cook you are. So I said, okay, I get out. So after a while I went out, and the Swiss fellow said to me, you have to cook the breakfast? I said, certainly. I said, I'm the only woman, and sweetie wants show off, and he wants to show what I can do. So we had breakfast, and I said to this fellow, let's hurry, because I want to go ahead again and get started to walk. And sweetie said to me, says, Kit, you go and shut the fire out, wash the dishes, put everything in place, light the fire, so when the next fellow comes, he finds a fire ready. That's what we found. You know, that was the ruling of the walks when you walk. Oh, I got everything done, and they just had the horses found to go and put them on a wagon. And I say, sweet, can I walk again? He says, yeah, but I'm sure today we pick you up because it's a 28-mile hike. And I said, oh, we start walking. So the Swiss fellow, he said, he walks with me again, and away we went.
Jimmy, what year was this? Do you remember?
In 1929. Mm-hmm. And so I walked a hike, you know, and we keep going and going and going. And finally, we reached the other last house you found on the road commission. The road commission had a very narrow road, you know, a humpity-pumpity. You couldn't walk, and the wagon wheels wasn't cut out. There was a solid piece of wood, and they wanted to put me on top. I said, nothing doing. So when Sweetie came with the whole gang there.
Was he on top? Was he riding?
No, he was next to the driver on the wagon, Sydney, yeah. And you see, Sidney was 21 years older than I. And so naturally, I wouldn't take a sit and let him walk or hike or sit on top there. So, and I love to walk. That's one thing I always love, to walk. So we went and we got there before the horses and came and the mules. So I said, now the man said, well, today we have no steaks. The first day we had steaks with us. Let's go and get a bunch of fish. And right there was the creek, you know. And it's still the time where you found fish and fish and fish and more fish. So we had 48 fish caught till they arrived.
Oh.
And I naturally, I didn't bring any in. He made me a fishing pole with wood. And he says, now go. And when I had one, I tickled and said, I got one, I got one, I got one. He says, don't chickle him off again. But I always did. I felt sorry, I think, for the poor fish. So we had this, and when Sidney came, we showed him the fish. He says, how did you do it? Well, the same like yesterday. He said, boy, and I was worried to take you along because of the journey we have to go. Then the next day, we started on horseback. And we had two horses with us and two mules. They loaded up the mules to carry, and we went on. And as we went on, we had to go over swamps and all kinds of things, you know. And the man said, just let the horse go, we'll go, you know. So as we went about 16 miles, the man said to me, how goes it? Oh, I say, I don't know, I don't feel myself. And before I was saying I don't feel myself, he pulled me off the horse, took a stick, popped it in my back, and said, walk, woman. Walk, woman. Walk, woman. I say, hey, let me stay up a little bit. No, sir. He says, keep walking or you never walk. Then he said, now you can walk 3 miles. And after 3 miles, you can get on the horse again.
Oh.
And then we had to ride still about 10 miles to get the first mining cabin where we had lunch.
Where, which way were you going? Towards Mount McKinley on the road? Yes.
No, it's from Talkeetna over, you know. I couldn't, yeah, we was on the north side, see.
Oh.
No, we were on the south side, you're on the north side.
Did you start the hike at Talkeetna?
Talkeetna, yeah, mm-hmm. And, but it was really a wonderful hike. And then we had the horses, and the next day we had to go and went to Poor Man's Creek. That was a mine. Sidney was one of the owners of it. And we stayed there overnight. And the next journey, Sidney stayed back in the cabin. And we went to go and hunt. We found then the Dick had 7 huskies. And the huskies and I, Dick went with us.
You
that was the man. So
Dick
the.
Who?
Dick, well, I don't know his other name anymore. Dick, Dick, he was the man who got shot later on. And this German mining couple who was up there, very good friends of Sidney. They both got shot. All 3 got shot. Yeah, and anyhow, they never found who did it. So we went on that day, and Jeffrey did not find the camp right away. And he says, I would be a bum packer when I couldn't find the old camp. So he took the horse and he went away, and suddenly he said, I found something. And that was the easel Sidney made out of a hardwood sled and left it behind. And that is still there. Yeah, and this easel, that's where the first Mammon Kinley was painted on. And the dog, you know, with the dogs we went, and then after he found it, he said to our campman, he said, Art, I think you should stay here overnight. I'll leave you with a couple of dogs. And Art Cranky, he stayed overnight and waited. And the other day, Sidney went with everything to put the tent and everything up. And then he went, they came back and picked me up, and I went the next day.
Oh, yeah.
And we spent the whole summer in front of Mount McKinley. We took movies, and I'm sorry I haven't got them with me, because it's really interesting. It was a wonderful trip. So we spent time the whole summer there till we came back. And will you shut it off a minute? Just a minute. Can we?
Okay, now you can go on.
Yeah. Now, all this happened during 29. Yeah, in the year 29 when we went up to Mount McKinley. And I forgot where I stopped. See.
Well, you were going, I think you were in your final camp now.
Ah, on the way out, huh? Oh, we got in and, yeah, they had the camps made. Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. We found the easel. And Sydney painted on that easel the whole summer then. And we spent the whole summer there. And the first thing, nights, he says there's quite a few bears. And the first thing, there came a bear scratching on my tent, and I scratched back. And that bear started getting very friendly. And Sidney Rowans got very itchy. He said, oh, kid, don't bring me bears along, because I can smell them, but I can't hear them and see them. Because Sidney was deaf, you know, as deaf and then went off the wars he was in. And, you know, Sidney's life was so interesting. And so that bear came every day. And on a nice day, I went there to go and greet the bear, and they grabbed the gun, and bang, bang, they shot him. So I skinned them, and they hang up the skin they wanted, but the skin was not too good. And Artie wanted to take it along to Los Angeles to show that he shot a bear. But the poor thing wasted away. It rained so much, and we had no, what you call, circle salt, you know, to salt them down and roll them up to tan them later. So we lost the fur, but anyhow, my poor bear was gone. But I had lots of other animals. I had 48 mice. I had all the birds around the tent. And I think I had the most wonderful time in all my life. We were all alone there in the wilderness, hiking around. Then the winter came towards autumn. It was September, and we expected the packers to come and get us. And every day they looked and looked and looked. And I say, sweetie, you're putting a hole in that mountain there with your looking. He says, Jeffy's not coming yet. And one morning I look over to the hill far, far off. And I say, aha, Jeffy's coming, and the horses and the mules over there in that mountain. Sidney says, kid, you can't see that far. I say, certainly I can. I tell you, I see them coming. So they grabbed quickly their glasses and went looking. Oh, he says, yeah, that's right. There he is. How in the world, what an eyesight you got. That's what God gave me, is a wonderful eyesight. Still today, at my 78 years, I'm in perfect vision. So I have a lot to be grateful. So you never saw a tent and everything go down so fast. When he came, everything was rolled up and ready to go, because the snow was drawing nearer and nearer and nearer. And Sidney says, kid, you don't understand. When the snow comes here, we can't get out. We haven't got enough food to keep us till February. And I, no, I said, that would be all right. We stretch it. He says, it can't be stretched anymore. So when Jeff came, everything was packed, and away we went. And we went the same journey as we came. But this time, he didn't bring a second horse, and I walked out all the way. And when we left, Sidney had the, I said, no, sweetie, you ride the horse, and I walk. My legs ache worse on the horse than when I, you know, one of those huge, big truck horses, you know. So we walked, and he said, now when you see a bear, kid, turn around and walk the other way. Don't be brave. Well, not sooner that we walked about 2 miles ahead of us, trotted an ice bear. Sidney says, I said, Sidney says we should return. Where do we go to? They have the tents, they have everything. Ah, he said, what should we do? I said, first of all, we just hide behind him very slow and see what he's doing. So we came and the bear went and we went. And suddenly he stopped, we stopped. Then he went and he ran down and walked across. I said, now our road is clear. And we passed, he was by the river, just bang him out the fish. You know, they slap him out so nice. And we watched him a little bit and then we went on. And this night then we had to hike till Poor Man's Creek. Then we stayed overnight there. And the other day we went back to Dick's mining camp where he had his camp. And we spent the night there, and I don't think I spent a colder night in my life because we had to sleep on the floor in a sleeping bag. The next day we had to walk 42 miles because we had no place to stop. And the chef said, the packer says, when that woman does it, I take my heart off. And Janie had to do it. She just went. We had no time to sit down and eat. And then we were 16 miles on the wagon. Then we waited, and we had to cross the three rivers and go over to Talkeetna, where we waited till the train. You know, at that time, we had one train a week. So we waited for the train and back to Anchorage we went, and that was our trip into Monmouth McKinley. And Sydney had quite a few studies, and I had quite a few studies, which I still have in hiding, from which I often, you know, keep painting and reminding the time we spend around there. So I got to think. Now then we went back to Anchorage, Alaska, where we had the studios in the Anchorage Hotel, Sydney and I. Each one had their own studio and painted for our studies we made in Monmouth McKinley. From there, we went back to California and stayed there most of the winter, came back in spring, and repeated that for quite some years. And one day we had the studio at the Washington Hotel in Seattle. One morning early, somebody called up, Janie, go down in the gallery. You have a big group of people who wants to talk with you. Sydney had some beautiful paintings there. One of them was a 12 by 16 feet canvas of Monmouth McKinley. And one lady came to me and said, oh, but how beautiful he faked that foreground. I said, lady, what did you say? Please repeat. He said, how beautiful he faked that foreground.
Effected,
yeah. I said, oh, no. I said, that is just as it is. And she looked at me straight in the eye and said, what a liar you are. So I started to laugh, and I said, well, it sees you never was in Alaska. She says, no, and everybody knows that Alaska is but ice and snow. I said, you're all wrong. I said, it's beautiful in the summer like out here. We give all variations of flowers, ever so many, you hardly believe it. That gentleman who listened to it came to my help, and said, will you take back what you just said to the lady? Because just what she said is exactly as it is, because I spent June, July, and August in Alaska, and I saw it with my own eyes. So she says, oh, I'm sorry, and I'm a teacher teaching my kids that Alaska is but ice and snow. I went up to Sydney's studio, and I laughed. I said, sweetie, I just was called a great big liar. And I told him the story. And suddenly the dog came to me. I said, do you know, sweet, what I got to do? I said, I think when we are getting back to Alaska now, I'm going to make a study of the Alaska wildflowers and put them down to a book form. And that's how I started to study the wildflowers of Alaska. And I have 300 different flowers of the Alaska flora, starting from Ketchikan up to the Bering Seas. Every year I spent in a different part of Alaska painting and taking a picture, making my studies of the Alaska wildflowers. They are in a book form now, but the price of that is so high that I couldn't afford it. Well, it cost me a great fortune to go from one place to another. They want $50,000 to make the colored place. So naturally, I didn't get to do it as yet. So, shut it off again. Yeah. I think now we should go and talk a bit from my sweetie, Sydney Lawrence. I told how I met him, yeah. And Sydney was a wonderful, wonderful pal. My prettiest and nicest time in my life was the 14 years married to Sydney. We had wonderful times together. Also, I would like to say the time where he was young and he studied. When he was 9 years old, he already painted. And Edouard Morin, a great painter in New York, was a good friend of his dad. And so, one day, when they were together, he said to Edouard Morin, "I have my son, he's 9 years old, and I think he has very great talent. And I think you would take him under your wing and give him some lessons." He says, "No." He says, "I don't give lessons." So they let it go at that. But one day he was invited again by Edouard Morin, and he took a few studies along of the boy. When he showed it to Edouard Morin, he said, "Oh my, yes, you bring that boy. I don't give nobody lessons, but I take him in hand." And so he studied with Edouard Morin. After that, Sydney Lawrence was already showing paintings at 16 years at the International Gallery. From then on, Sydney Lawrence went to Europe. I got nearly forgot how he got to go away. When he was a young boy, he wanted to go to sea. He wanted to study the sea, and his father said, "No, nothing doing." So there was a boat in town, the Edmund Yates, and Sydney Lawrence went and did hike on that boat. When the boat was well underway, he got hungry, and he came out of hiding. He went to the captain and said, "Aye, aye, sir. What work can I do? I'm hungry. I like to get something to eat." The captain looked at the boy. He said, "Aren't you the Lawrence boy?" He said, "Yes, sir." He said, "What are you doing on my ship?" He says, "I want to be a seafaring man." He said, "You better get off that ship. You don't belong here. Your father don't know anything about it." He says, "No, sir." He said, "You got to get off the ship." He said, "Captain, it's too far to walk, and the water is too deep, and to swim it's too long." So he said, "Oh, I got to send word to your father so he doesn't worry too much." At that time, they had to send couriers back. So he had to send the courier to go and let the father know that he has the son on his boat.
How far out was it?
About 6 miles. At least 6-7 miles, quite out, you know, not to go, that he can't swim back. Anyhow, the captain did take such a liking to the boy, and he said to the father, "Will you let me know what to do with him? You keep him on board ship and make a seafaring man out of him. And don't let them offshore for 4 whole years. So the captain took them all over the world. It was a seafaring freighter gone all over the world. On the 4th year, he was first lieutenant on the boat. And they came on the way back. They hit a hurricane, or the end tail of a hurricane. Their boat got split in two, but by luck they had lumber on the boat. And the captain said, "Quick, man, wire that boat together the best you can." After they were through doing that, the captain said, "Now, my crew, there's the lifeboat. It's up to you. It's up to you to decide. You know my fate is to stay with the ship." The captain at that time went down with the ship. "And I stay with the ship." And Sidney Lowne said, "And I stay with the captain." And the man said, "Don't be crazy. You don't need to go down with the captain. That's the captain." And Sidney looked at that rolling water and he says, "I'll stay with the captain." So they took the lifeboat, they went down, they put a little provision on what they needed, and they went off. And they wasn't 3 miles, they looked through the chumel, I call it chumel, I can't think on the glasses, through it, and the boat capsized, and a wave swallowed them up, and that was the end of the crew. And he said, the captain said, "What made you possess to stay with me?" He says, "Captain, did you see what just happened to them? I know I'd be safer on this tow than I would be on their boat. That's why I stayed with me, and you needed somebody to look after you. Because at that time, when the boat got broken, the mast fell on the captain's two legs and broke both of his legs. And they went and put splints on his leg, and then still, so he could stand up. And when they went then on, and they was floating 5 weeks on that water, till they finally was seen and picked up and towed into England. And that boat was a total loss. No. From England then, he went over to Paris to study. He went 6 years to the Beaux-Arts, where he was top. In the Beaux-Arts, they only accept painter or architect, anything they teach. They will know they reach the top when they know that they are just halfway to go and come on top. They send them to the in schools where they can go, and they don't care if they do something so long they pay the tuition. But they saw what Sidney could do, and they kept him on for 6 years he studied. After that, he went back to England, and where he joined the Royal Academy and studied again 4 years. And meantime, he got very well acquainted, and he got a very good friend of the Prince of Wales, and they were playing golf together and spent lots of time together in Buckingham Palace. In the meantime, the war broke out. The Zulu, Boer, Boxer, and Spanish American, where they made Sidney war correspondent for the Black and White. And he came out of the war, the Zulu War. He got beat up, what they call them, stole their headstones, and they got on Sidney's head, and that deafened him. The second blow usually kills. But before he went down, he saw that that fellow who swung that rack got shot in the head by an English soldier and came down. But Sidney still was deafened on that one side. That's the first time in history an English square was broken in. An English square that was where the general and all the higher ups did watch the war and what's going on and recording it. That where Sidney was in with them as the war correspondent. From then on, he went back to England. When the next war, I forgot if the Boer, the Boer War, I think, was the next. Well, anyhow, he was in the Boer War again, where in Africa, the Boer War was in Africa, yeah. Baxter was
South
in,
Africa.
Yeah. In South Africa, yeah. And you know, they built those bridges to run over the rivers. And they built a bridge in a hurry, and they scrambled all on their little African horses. And as Sidney crossed, there came one and shot his horse right away under him and took a piece of his hind knee away. And then he got to the hospital, and the doctors looked at him, and they patched him up. And he said to the doctor, "I can't stay here. I'm the war correspondent. I got to follow the war." So he said, "All right." He said, "Give that fellow a horse so he can go on again." And on he went, and he didn't get far away. Bang, bang, it came again. And they shot a big hunk out of him on the same spot. So they picked him up this way and pushed him back to the hospital. The two doctors looked at him and they said, "Do I see right? Aren't you the fellow which is patched up on that patch?" He says, "Yes, sir, that was me." And the doctors both said, "Well, you just hang on to that guy and put him in the hospital and keep him there before he comes with his whole ass shot away." So that's how Sidney got out of that war later on. Then he got to the Boxer War. When the Boxer War was on, then one day he was so tired, he climbed in a freighter and went to sleep. Later on, when he woke up and he climbed out there, he looked at rich, huge men. He looked at them and said, "Gee, where am I?" One man who spoke English said, "You're with the Boxer, and you're our prisoner now." And he said, "Oh, no, I can't stay with you. I'm the war correspondent. I got the report." So they went and talked among them, and they took seemingly a liking to Sidney. "Okay," he said, "little fellow, you go and run. You can go to your, go and join him." So they let him go. And he said, "You know, as I started running away, I always felt a shot coming. But boy, they didn't do it. They just let me go." And so that was his experience in the Boxer War. So from there, then came the next war. Then, oh, he traveled all over. He wasn't in World War One. That was long before. Yeah. When the World War One came on, he wanted to join again. And he came hiking 140 miles from, no more, because I don't think there was the train yet. He came hiking out from Monmonkinley. And when he got here, and they looked at him, and they said, "Oh, man, no, you can't. You have flat feet. You can't walk." He said, "What? I just come walking 140 feet. What do you say I can't walk?" And he told them which war he was in. He says, "At that time, they know nothing. We had to hike." He says, "No, sir." He says, "Well, when you want walk so bad, go and join the Salvation Army. They hike along with us." So Sidney says, "That didn't sound good to me," so he forgot about it. So that was Sidney's experience with the different wars. Mm-hmm.
When did he come to Alaska?
Sidney came to Alaska in 1900, the last World War. He was already in Alaska when the First World War started. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All his years here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Why did he like it here better than
Europe? Oh, I don't know. He was, he liked, excitement, new things, new ways, and new experiences. And when they came out of the last war, he and a friend together said, "Now let's go someplace where there's something else to be done." And they heard about the gold rush. And so that's how he started to come to Alaska. And he said, well, he found that it's more dirt mixed with the gold. So he went to Juneau back and to go back out. They told him, "Oh, man, you haven't got much luck." And they discouraged him. They went to Juneau, and from Juneau he got back to Seattle. When he came back, he says, "Oh, don't let him discourage." He says, "There's lots of gold in the ground." Back to Alaska he came again, and then he stayed. He went mining and looking for gold for years. And he had, for at one time, his own boat, and went from this boat, went from another, in to bring people, you know, miners and all, up the Susitna River with his own boat. Then he gave that up, and for 9 years, he just didn't do too much about painting anymore. He just wanted to find the gold, but he couldn't. Is it ready? In 1914, they started to build the city Anchorage, you know, when the city was first a tent, and Sydney had a photo shop. Well, in the meantime, he made nice little watercolor studies, and he had his photo shop in when Anchorage started to build up to be a city. And one man from Washington, D.C. came, and Sidney wanted to have some pictures developed right away. And Sidney said, he said to Sidney, "Who painted those watercolors here?" Well, he said, "I did." He said, "What are you doing behind that corner there? And that's not your job." He says, "You should paint." And then he says, "How much you want for those?" And he figured it out, and the man took out the checkbook and bought the whole thing. Every one of them. So Sidney says, "Yes, I think maybe the man is right. I'm in the wrong business. I better go back to my painting again." And so that's how Sidney started to paint again. Then in 1912, he went up to Mormon Kinley. At that time, he was shipwrecked coming from the mine to go to Valdez, and as he came, wasn't a hurricane, but the storm came up, and Sidney saw it, and he said, "Sidney Lowndes, you go to that land as quick as you can." He wasn't too far away, but before he reached it, his boat capsized, everything he had in it. He had a pot of gold with him, and all he had went right upside down, down in the water, and he threw it. And it was in November. It was frozen, it was cold, and he had to swim to shore, which by luck was not far away. But when he started to climb up, he slid down again. About 4 or 5 times that happened. And he said, "Lowndes, you can't do that. You've got to grab a hold and get up there before you drown in there." And finally he made it. Then he stayed wet as a poodle. He said, "Now what you going to do?" He remembered a cannery in the neighborhood. It was about 3 miles to hike. So he made it in thought, and he got there. Usually there is a fire prepared. Well, the fire was prepared. But he couldn't find any matches. Well, he had his matchbox in the pocket. But his hands were cold. Finally, he could fumble and get them out. And lo and behold, the matchbox wasn't screwed tight. And the matches were wet. And he couldn't do anything. He didn't find anything to make fire. So he sat down. He says, "Now what am I going to do? There I got to sit freezing to death." He thought, suddenly he remembered about 6 miles away, there was an Indian camp. And he said, "Well, you just as well start going and trotting and try anyhow. I better die in my tracks than sitting here waiting for it." He went and hiked and went, and he had to swim 3 rivers. When he went in the first one, he felt very warm against the cold, icy clothes he had on. He got out the first, he got out of the second, and the third was the toughest one. When he came out, the Indians only was about 200 to 250 feet away from the shore. And he said, "Lowndes, don't fall. Don't fall. He says he couldn't stay back on his legs straight, but he fumbled ahead. And he says, don't fall. When you hear the dogs, you're safe. Because at that time, nobody came around the villages. And the dogs only barked when something was around. And suddenly he heard those dogs bark. He says, I'm safe. Then he dropped down. He went out like a light. And when he came back, it was 3 days later. And he was towed in coal oil. They towed him out in coal oil. Yeah, towed him out with coal oil. He was frozen just by luck. The marrow didn't freeze. So a few days later, they took him to Valdez, to the hospital. When he was in the hospital, then doctor wanted to amputate the leg. He says, Lawrence, we got to amputate the leg. He looked at the doctor and said, doctor, those legs go with the little fellow and the little fellow goes with the leg. So jolly well leave him alone. Well, he said, have it your way, but you won't walk anymore. And we got to be fair of gangrene. He says, now just give that little fellow a chance. I fight that thing. Lo and behold, he did fight. And by Christmas, he walked on crutches. And they had in Valdez, the men, you know, they gathered in the little, in the bar. So he said to the nurse, can I go out to the boys for a little bit? No, no, you would get drunk. He says, first, I'm not a drinking man. Second, I haven't got a bean to my name. I couldn't get drunk if I want to because everything is down deep in the water. Well, she says, I give you a couple of hours, but you be back in a couple of hours, he said. Oh, yes, I'll be back in a couple of hours. He went to go, and he went in, and they saw him coming in. He says, oh, Lawrence, come on, sit in with us. They played poker. Well, he said, I don't play poker, and I don't care to play poker, but I join you. And they said, what do you have to drink? He says, nothing. He says, I haven't got a bean to my name. He says, who asked you if you have a bean to your name? He asked you what you want to drink. Oh, then he offered something, and he sat there, jolly, and looked at them. Suddenly he looked out, and the rose cast on the mountain was so gorgeous that right out of a clear sky, he said to those fellows, you know, fellows, I don't know why every artist went to Monmouth Kinley to make a painting. You could make a $10,000 painting there. And they looked at him, he says, ha, who would want to do a chance and do, go that way? He says, I would. He says, I bet you don't know how to hold a brush. He said, I felt good enough to start to brag a little bit. And I said, now listen, don't you say that. I belong to the Royal British Artists. I have all the honors the artists can get. I got all the prizes in Paris. I have four concours. And one of my paintings is going to the Louvre. So they opened their eyes and said, oh, what? And they still didn't quite believe it. He says, when you stop playing cards and your money away and hand it to me and state me, I go and prove to you that I'm a good painter. So they all took their money out. Then he took his hat down his cap, and put everything in it, took his crutches and humped along and went to shore, where by luck a boat was in. There he went and stowed away again. And he stowed in one of the boats, you know. And when the boat was well on the way, he went to the person and said, give me a ticket to Seward. He says, Lawrence, how did you get on that boat? He says, never mind how I get on, just sell me a ticket. So he was always scared that they come and, you know, hound for him before the boat leaves. So he did get away and went to Seward and started to outfit himself in Seward. He rode back with the boat to Seattle for the art materials he needed, and he started on crutches a 400-mile walk with 7 dogs and a sled. And he hiked, and it took him 4 trips, relay trips, and on his last relay trip, he had his materials to paint Monmouth Kinley. And he went up there, and that's how the first Monmouth Kinley is painted. And the first large, 12 by 16 feet, is in the National Gallery in Washington, D.C. Yeah. Sidney was an adventurous man. He wanted adventure. And when he heard about the gold rush, that's when he came. And he left the painting not because he was discouraged, it's because he wanted to get enough gold out to have another experience. And the painting, there is the large painting in the Louvre now of Setting Sun, Coast of Cornwall, where he won the Hors Concours. And Hors Concours means without competition. It cannot be made better. So that's the painting for is now in the Louvre. But it is not in the Louvre proper where we usually go. That's the 16th, 17th, and 18th century. Sydney is in the 19th and 20th century. You've got to ask where that one is, because I missed it. I went 3 times to Paris to go and see it, and each time I missed it. And the third time we went, Marichardi and I, we found it was closed. So I never got to see it. So that's, I could go on with that story. It was so much Sidney's experiences, you know, that I could hold you on here for a whole night, but I think I better start to think to stop. What do you say?
Doing the last 10 years or so.
I? Still studying on the wildflowers, and since 52 I actually made 9 trips to Europe. For 32 years I didn't go to Europe to visit the family. And my sisters did write to me and said, Jenny, why don't you come home? They wouldn't come, you know. She's scared of boats, she's scared, I think, of her own shadow. So I said, Marichardi says, well, Jenny, why don't you come? I go to Europe and you come with me. Well, I said, okay, we can do that. But at that time I was building my house, you know. And my in Anchorage, yeah. And my family, when my sister wrote, she says, why don't you come? So I wrote back, I said, I'm sorry, but I just built a house which is much, much more expensive than I thought it would be, and I don't think I ever will see you. And that was already the time I applied for a passport. So I got to Europe, and a friend of mine came along with us, and Marie. And when I got to Colmar, where's my hometown, I said to the taxi man, I said, I want to go to the Nouvelle Hotel. He says, have your reservation. I said, no. He said, well, lady, I'm sorry, but you won't get, you have to make reservations ahead. Well, I say, I don't know. I get the room there anytime I want to. He says, oh, why? I said, do you know Mrs. Kemp very well? Oh, certainly. I bring her always the people in there. And I said, then look back. And he looked back. He looked at me. You're the sister from America. I said, yes, but don't waltz in and tell her because I want to surprise them. They think I never be coming. So I walk into my sister's hotel and I say in French, I would like very much to have a room and this lady with me here too. And she says, yes. Now she has a habit of rolling those hands all the time together. And so I grab her hand. It made me nervous looking at it. So I grab her hand. She shook hands with me and says, I don't know, that face is so familiar and I don't know where to put it. I say, oh, put it on your sister Jane. Blah, down she goes.
You fell,
baby? She just, nearly, yeah. Her husband came running and put a chair and said, mimala, mimala, sit down. I say, oh my God, has she a heart ailment? I hope she's not sick. And then after a while I say, just because I came, you don't need to put a feint on. And she said, well, then she walked from one table to the other and told the people, 32 years I didn't see her, and she says I shouldn't get excited. And so that's how I got my first trip to Europe, and since then I went 9 times.
Mm-hmm. You spend most of your time at home there?
Oh, yeah. I spend it all over. My sister spent the month of June usually in Switzerland. And when her husband was living, we went all over Switzerland. And I always arranged to be home during the month of June. So I had the trip with them. And then I spent lots of time in Austria, in Germany, in Italy, and in Sweden, France, all over in Paris, you know, for a while. Now I had I have great thanks to my dear God because I had a wonderful, wonderful life. I can say that.
Did you make your expenses mostly from your things?
From my work, yes. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm always broke.
Yeah,
now I start working for the next trip.
Mrs. Cassidy, may I ask a question and a pertinent to the court again? Janie Lambert, will you tell us where your house was located in Anchorage and what year it was built? What did you design?
Oh, my own one.
Yes.
In 1948, they started.
What was the location?
At Bootlegger's Cove.
Bootlegger's Cove.
Yeah.
You don't remember streets or districts?
Yeah, it's Scenic Way now.
On Scenic Way.
Scenic Way now. 1720
right,
Scenic
now,
Way.
I would like to ask another question. When you were down on the coast, what was the exact location when you were down on the
Scenic Way? Where my house is?
No. Away from your house. When you and camped
out. Oh, we was up in the mountains then, you know.
What location?
Right in front of Monmouth Kinley, about 35 miles away.
On the right on side of
on the south, way. South, no, we wasn't in the park. We went in from the south side.
From the south?
Yeah, the mountain is more picturesque from the south side than from the north side.
That's what I want to determine. The purpose of asking these questions, in the later years, they want to establish historical locations and monuments.
Uh-huh.
And facts.
Mm-hmm.
And some little words that we might, you know, here will help establish.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
what three rivers did you cross when you crossed? What was the sounding name?
The Talkeetna, Susitna, and Jalitna.
Jalitna.
Mm-hmm.
Jalitna.
Yeah. And I was the most scary thing I ever did because I'm scared of water. Brrr. I can't swim. And you know those little boats?
Yeah.
We went up the river and then they shoot right over.
So may I ask you where you were born? What town? And
In the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in Colmar, Rorin, France. In France.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Hey, how do you spell that
town
where you were born?
C-O-L-M-A-R.
Oh, Colmar.
A very beautiful historical town. Our museum was written up in the same time that my school was written up in, my school was
you
named...
You mentioned the name of your
school. Sœur de Ribeauvillé.
And how many years did you go there?
Till I was 17. Then I went 2 years to the art school with nuns. Then I went with a painter from Munich who came and teached in our town for a year. Then afterwards I had two ladies who came and opened the art school and I was with them about 2 years. And meantime, the First World War broke out and one of the family had to give up a girl for hospital work. And that was the time then when the girl started to study doctor. So I went in to study doctor, and for 4 years I studied medicine and worked in the hospital.
During the war?
During the war, the First World War. And that's how I got just one more examination to have my doctor title. But my father said, no doctor in our family. No artist in our family. But he gave me all the opportunities to study. He says, I know there isn't anything in you but art, so I'll let you have the opportunity, but don't think you ever can be an artist. They start today. No, doctors, men are all right for doctors, no women. So he tore everything up. But my doctor, before I came to the country, he says, Jenny, when you want to finish your doctor, I give you a hand and help you. I get you to pay for tourism. But then I came to America by luck. I love it. And always did, and I just dearly love my Alaska.
Recorded by Jean Long.